This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han. It's just after 6 o'clock in the morning. Of course, it is the 28th of July. And a Friday, a cause for endless celebrations. Your paycheck, if you're a salaried person, your paycheck is probably in today or was in yesterday or might be coming Monday.
And that's totally what we live for, right? The paycheck.
Absolutely.
And also, can you believe it? You know, we are just on the eve of August, you know, like how time flies, right? I was just celebrating the new year.
You were just 21 only moments ago, yeah. And now you're deep into your 30s.
Yeah, 30s, yeah.
30s, yeah.
Not that deep, but
yeah, well, don't worry. You'll wake up one day and you'll discover you're 50 and celebrating your 50th birthday. It's and you'll have three kids, all of whom are just about to go to school, and you're going to have to fork out thousands and thousands of ringgit.
Oh, you sure do know how to rain on my parade, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Gerard.
No, but Fridays, so we can forget what the future is because there's a weekend to look forward to. Do you have a plan, Mr. Tan Chung Han?
The plan is to try to relax as much as possible. I think I deserve it. And I think most of you listening right now, you certainly deserve every single moment of downtime over the weekend. So by all means, enjoy it.
Okay, so what we're going to do is prepare you, perhaps not for the weekend, but for life in general and the working day, because it's Friday is not over, it's just begun. Now, lots of news that's graced our screens since we went to sleep. When you wake up, you'll find that astronomers have discovered what could be the first known moon located beyond the solar system. Now, is interplanetary news like that interesting to you? Things coming from the universe, does that excite you, Han?
Not really, unless if we start talking about, say, a human colony on that moon, then maybe.
Or aliens, yeah. Or alien life. I mean, whether it's microbiotic or in the form of microbes, or it's actually humanoid.
I think all that kind of. I think that all that kind of died after X-Files ended, though, for me. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. After that, I was like, all right, you know, tell me something, you know, that shocks or surprises me.
I must say, I find a tremendous solace in knowing that we're just a little grain of salt, as it were, in this huge thing called the universe. It is very calming to know that one is insignificant ultimately. Also, have you read the works of Arundhati Roy?
Nope.
Never?
Nope.
Well, because she won a Booker Prize 20 years ago for her work, God of Small Things. She's now produced a second novel, and it's on the Man Booker Prize long list. So for anybody who's got a literary bent, who reads a literature, this might be exciting news for you. Also, yesterday we talked about the U.S. transgender ban Donald Trump, President of the United States, tweeted out. Now, a top general has come out to say, actually, there's no policy change from now. Transgender individuals can serve openly in the army until certain processes are put in place. So it's not that Trump doesn't have authority to change policy. It's that he doesn't seem to know that he has to follow a process.
And it also seems that, according to this general, that idea of banning transgender personnel from serving in the army, that's not completely off the table. It's just that it hasn't gone through due process. Is that what
There are several hoops to jump through before it gets to that. And of course, he's allayed the fears of those transgender individuals who are openly serving in the U.S. Army and saying, well, your position is secure for now. Okay, so we could talk endlessly about Donald Trump. I think he can fill our days only with, because, bitterness and regret, I think is probably how to put it. Okay, now we have, we'll be back with more, of course. This is Electric Light Orchestra and Do Ya, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Tan Chung Han, and that was Electric Light Orchestra with Do Ya. That's a nice little ditty there. We mentioned earlier, Han, the news that Donald Trump's attempt to ban the transgender individuals in the U.S. Army has been put on hold. Interestingly enough, and I don't know he's responsible for this, but British but American TV star James Corden, who does, I think, on the Late Late Show, now he's come out to issue a video, song and dance, criticizing Donald Trump for his
Have you seen the video? Band.
No, but it looks kind of funny because he's on a bow tie and a top hat. And if we could pull the music, maybe we would try and play you a bit of that. But we come to this other question, which is perhaps more compelling. I don't know if you've read the new novel by Bernice Chorley. Have you? Which is entitled Once We Were There. It is a novel set at the height of the Asian financial crisis and then the political crisis that followed. We often refer to it as the Reformasi years. And in it, actually in the first opening pages, she talks about tear gas. And because tear gas is a form of crowd control, very popular around the world. Now, in India, they've gone one step further. In the state of Kashmir, the disputed state of Kashmir, Indian forces were using rubber bullets, and I believe that was quite lethal. It led to people being blinded or killed. And so the Indian army, in its wisdom, decided to import what they call smelly bombs from Israel, which have been used on Palestinians. Now, these smelly bombs smell like corpses.
Yeah, so these stink bombs rather smell like, yeah, decomposed bodies and raw sewage. But apparently, it's not having the kind of intended effects. And I guess smell is very subjective because automatically, you know, I think of Malaysia's version of the stink bomb, that being durians. And for many Malaysians, it's, you know, obviously something that is cherished. It's a welcome smell.
Yeah, I mean, if you released the smell of durian in a crowd, they'd be rushing towards
right.
you,
exactly.
not away from you.
Exactly.
Yes, I mean, we do, of course, we, like I said, you know, in over the years, tear gas has been used against Malaysians by the government of the day. And it's very effective. You ever encountered tear gas? Have you?
No, I have not. Have you?
Yes. Wow. In many, not just in the during the Reformasi years, but in other contexts, in
Look
Indonesia,
you,
was the
activist.
first time. Well, you don't have to be an activist. You just have to be in a place where things are happening.
Yeah.
And it is, I don't think it's there, it's cultural. It just hits you like a force of nature and really, you know, really plays with your senses and, you know, your olfactory senses, of course, being one of those principal ways in which we sense the world. Though we're so visually inclined these days, we don't think of smell as being so important.
Yeah, that's right. And I wonder why tear gas is rather limited, at least in its usage in the Kashmir conflict, which prompted the government to then use these stink bombs. Why were the tear gas not enough? But
They used tear gas, they used pellet guns, but the pellet guns left people dead and blinded. I don't think the intention was to maim and murder, but that was the consequence. So they moved to the stink bombs. I mean, on the face of it, it seems like a somewhat funny story, and this report from Huffington Post India is written in a way that sort of does suggest that it is what they call the great Indian nose and its ability to be to kind of weather all kinds of smells. And of course, you know, I think, you know, having lived in, grown up in Singapore for many years, I had to adjust my nose to living in other places, in other cities, because there are all kinds of smells that assail you. Whereas in Singapore, generally, the country is so sanitized.
Sterile.
It's not sterile. Sterile is another issue altogether, but, you know, there we have to look at the response of the Singapore government to Sunny Liu's brilliant book, The Art of Charlie Chan Hock Chai, the graphic novel.
But yet, at the same time, you've got the likes of Bill Gates, you know, who is apparently funding development of odor-free toilets for India. And it just goes to show that odor, you know, obviously a very hot topic over there.
Absolutely.
In, on the subcontinent.
And, you know, and public sanitation and such, all of which, you know, as they say, cleanliness leads to godliness. So cleanliness is next to godliness, I think is the expression. Yeah. We'll be back with more. This is Incubus, and are you in BFM 89.9? BFM 89.9, Tan Cheng Han and myself, Sharad Kutin, and the morning rolls on. It's just past 18 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. It's still dark out there, at least in Bandar Utama. I don't know what it's like on your side of the
Klang Valley.
The Klang Valley. You know, if you have a sunshine, tell us all about it. The sun has risen. And something is wrong with the planet, I think. But so much is going wrong with the planet. I don't know anymore. Never mind about the planet. What about movies and popular culture? So we have the big movie that's opening up in our cinemas because it's called Dunkirk. And for a generation, that would have been a name that needed no explanation. Of course, people who lived through the Pacific War. But there are very few people around who've lived through the Pacific War. Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad would have lived through the Pacific War because he's 92. Right. Anybody in their 80s would have lived part of their lives, maybe a very early part of their lives, through the Pacific War. And so, or in their 70s, I guess, that would be true too. Mm. But for us who don't remember the great battles of the Pacific War, we can... Do you know any, just from having watched movies or read some history, you think of Iwo Jima or Dunkirk or, battles like that?
Yeah, well, I was a big fan of the Band of Brothers miniseries. In fact, I spent quite a bit of time in living outside of Fort Bragg where the airborne were stationed at. So this was on the east coast of the United States in the state of North Carolina. So, yeah, I've actually met some people, who...
Ooh. Fought in the war?
Yeah, fought in World War II. But yeah, there's World War II. So apparently with Dunkirk, there was the evacuation of British and French allied troops from northern France in 1940.
Yeah. Technically that's not the Pacific War, right? I mean, I said the Pacific War. I meant the World War II as it was fought in this part of the world. But you're absolutely right. It's World War II. Mm. That's what everybody else calls it. Dunkirk is part of a different part of that history, at least geographically speaking. My uncle served in the Battle of Imphal, which for people you might know is a town on the border between India and Burma, or then Burma, now Myanmar. Mm.
I guess for like my generation, the millennials and such, we hear scattered, versions of the oral history when it comes to the Japanese occupation here in Malaysia, and certainly in my hometown of Klang, the atrocities that the Japanese troops carried out during that time.
Absolutely. So the other thing, of course, is as people more and more learn history from Hollywood, in this case, I don't know if it is Hollywood, it's Christopher Nolan's big blockbuster, and there's all this concern about whether a movie about British troops would be excite a transatlantic audience, meaning would they excite the audiences over there being, of course, in the US. Everybody from, Nigel Farage of UKIP have been extolling this as a kind of nationalist moment. But what's interesting about it is in the discussions, because it's being, celebrated in different parts of the world where this movie's opened, including India, the questions have been raised about the historical accuracy of the film that's left out the role of troops from different parts of the British Empire that served Britain during both First and Second World Wars.
So apparently, according to this BBC article, the pushback appears to be due to the omission of the contribution from troops from South Asia, right, and particularly India. But one would think that it should be allowed because, in a movie, you only have 2.5 hours to tell a story, right? I mean, and obviously with such a, was this kind of epic movie, I mean, there are so many angles and so many versions of the story. It's near impossible to try and incorporate all of the angles into 2.5 hours, right?
Absolutely. If you think of movies like The English Patient, because the Sikh soldier in that, who's a central character in the romance in the English Patient, is kind of there because he's got a leading role, as it were. But there's also, I think, Han, the question of whether people even bother about historical accuracy. They're saying, after all, this is a work of fiction. This really should be taken on at face value for what it's trying to do. It's trying to tell a story. It's not trying to be a documentary.
Right, exactly.
But if you think of something like Ola Bola, also, which was that big Malaysian hit, which in some ways distorted history because it took a character, it gave the kind of triumphant moment to a character whose identity wasn't associated with the historical person, right?
That's right.
So the person was from Sabah. They used a peninsular Malay in order to, who scored the winning goal. films.
Right, so I think the value from these movies is that it can spur that discussion, right, and actually spur that interest in that particular event.
Absolutely.
Right, so, you know, having that movie, okay, then you can find out the exploits or the achievements of the Malaysian national football
team. Except for a generation like yours, who doesn't have any other touch points for historical accuracy, they're going to probably leave the cinema thinking, yeah, that's probably how it happened, right? And this is the problem. Because it's so real and almost like historical, that people will assume. I mean, with Game of Thrones, nobody's going to leave thinking this was part of ancient history, though. One hears enough comments made by younger people to think, yeah, perhaps they don't understand that this isn't a historical show.
What, everybody does
a show based on history.
Yeah? What, you don't have pet dragons running around your apartment? No,
no, I don't, actually. I only have pet demons. Speaking of which, up next, Amy Winehouse and her demons, Valerie, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin. That was a Blind Melon with No Rain. And of course, you know, the days have been very hot of late. I've had my potted plants wilting, literally wilting. And if I spray a bit of, you know, water on them, they just spring back to life. Wilting, I say, no rain. So I have to produce the rain myself. I do.
I don't know if that was like some gardening tips that you just gave, or like a weather report, all of the above. Yeah, nice.
Now,
okay,
we also tweeted out, a link to a story where, falling on the discussion we had about Ola Bola just now, just some facts about Ola Bola, the facts that were disputed. The men in that history say the director should have kept to the facts. And the director, of course, he himself had his own explanation, because it was kind of a movie based on historical facts, but not necessarily the history itself.
Right. And according to media reports, the director was quoted as saying that this movie was inspired by true events. And we have seen that same rationale for many blockbuster movies as well, right? Based on true events, but not necessarily a documentary of sorts, right?
So, and like Game of Thrones is based on, not on true events, but on a truth, a particular truth about the making of civilization, the nature of politics, the nature of finance, and also the nature of love.
And Game of Thrones also not without its controversies, because there was that recent cameo by Ed Sheeran, which attracted a lot of flack because, you know, it just completely shattered this entire realm of make-believe. You know, you have this, you know, again, this realm of mythical dragons and whatnot, and all of a sudden you got Ed Sheeran.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big fan of the Game of Thrones. And,
I thought you were going to say you're a big fan of Ed Sheeran.
No, I'm not. You know, I wouldn't have known who he was, you know, until I read the reports. I know he's a singer, but the point of being is that this ability to imagine and partake and believe in something that's clearly not true is a capacity that we all have in buckets, right? Even us who are not religious. So, you know, so this ability to kind of believe in dragons or mythical creatures.
Isn't that what movies are all about? Just suspending your belief?
Yeah, so it's not
suspending reality. From
Well, actually, it's called, in technical terms, the temporary suspension of disbelief.
Oh, disbelief. Right? Right,
so when you go to the theater and you watch people prancing on stage, you can still enter into that and believe everything being true and be moved by the emotions, because you have temporarily suspended disbelief, right? So you kind of believe, right? And
got
I think
it.
The Ed Sheeran moment might have come and gone. For all of us who love Game of Thrones and the world it's created, we would say, okay, yeah, for those couple of seconds where he sang that song, it seemed a bit unreal. And then we get back into the reality of Game of Thrones.
And likewise with Ola Bola, you know, for that 2 hours or so, you can then, bathe in the spirit of One Malaysia and hark back to those good old days.
That's right. So that's also involving the temporary suspension of disbelief. Is that what you're trying to say? Are you trying to say One Malaysia is a realm of fantasy?
Well, no, there are the realities of it. And, you know, let's face it, everyday life comes with its fair share of struggles. But for those 2 hours, you know, you can put on those rose-tinted glasses and go back to an era where everything was fine and dandy.
I don't know if you ever took them off. You know, I hear you backpedaling. I want to ask you again. I put it to you, young man. Yes. You just said that One Malaysia requires
One Malaysia in the contemporary set. Well, no, it okay. is fraught with challenges.
Okay,
how about
so
that?
So there you have. I mean, just to give you the facts, if you don't know, if you don't remember what the facts of Ola Bola were, James Wong scored the goal. The ball was passed to him by Hassan Sani. Both James Wong and Hassan Sani have come out not only to praise the movie but also to say they wish the director kept to the facts. Mm. The scoreline was also changed. It was 2-1 against South Korea. It became 3-2 in the movie.
But this is a theme that we spoke about earlier this week as well, Sharad, whereby you have these moments, these albeit manufactured moments, right, or manufactured events even, that can be used to galvanize support or really promote a certain message, right? So with Ola Bola, obviously the message was about unity, that we can all come together and achieve great heights.
And
right?
What could it have been done with James Wong's
story? Well, that is a valid question. Yeah. Because the story in itself is dramatic enough, right, where I don't know why the need to alter it. But hey, you know.
Okay, coming back to the reality of Planet Malaysia, the government yesterday banned a book by the G25 group. The book is called Breaking the Silence, Voices of Moderation, Islam in a Constitutional Democracy. That has been banned by the Home Ministry. According to the ministry, the book is prejudicial to national security. Because, you know, we've had the banning of books and the authors have fought back. If you think of that important book by Sisters in Islam, and the judge threw the government's case out the window. And so, you know, and the book was reinstated as a book that is legitimate for Malaysians to read. And we're also reminded of the saying by Heinrich Heine, where they have burned books, they will end up burning people.
And it's also the ideas that come along with it, right? And, you know, one really has to wonder how long this idea of an authoritarian, you know, rule being able to dictate, you know, how and when the public discourse should manifest itself, what kind of ideas are permissible. You know, I think it's only a matter of time, right, before that all becomes a bynote or footnote in the history books, right? Because with the internet and with the prevalence of, you know, various means of information technology, you know, you can only do so much when it comes to burning books or censorship, right?
First they started with Despacito, now it's the G25 book on...
See, but that's the thing,
No,
I mean, because you can still access Despacito from Spotify and YouTube.
Absolutely, yeah. And everybody knows that, including the people doing the banning. So Breaking the Silence, Voices of Moderation by G25 Malaysia, now on the banned list. Well, it's still Friday. And this is, it is. And this
is not Sunday yet?
No, it's not Sunday. The Easy Beat, Friday on my mind, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin, and The Morning Run continues. Coming up to 50 minutes past 6 on the 28th of July. Recently, the Prime Minister, Najib Razak, announced that the Malay language will continue to be empowered and, in fact, elevated to reach an international platform, which is all well and good. The question is how and can it be done? We spoke to Dr. Azhar Ibrahim. He's the Deputy Head of the Department of Malay Studies at the National University of Singapore. We asked him, for instance, you know, in terms of the elevation of the language, whether Malay slang words and shortened texts are detrimental to the quality of the language?
Well, it must start, of course, from school. I think if you look at our neighbours, from Aceh right up to Irian Jaya, they speak standard Bahasa, of course, with regional variations. Malaysia, unfortunately, I think the pedagogical structure or system in school, I think, you know, if you go even deep, Sabah, Sarawak, and even not just deep in cities of Kelantan, people don't speak standard Bahasa. Right? That's one thing. So, I mean, in terms of pedagogical scheme in the school, I think the teaching of Bahasa is still not effective. That's my take. And we are talking about those at home who speak Bahasa. Imagine those who at home speak other dialects or other languages. Right? So their command of Bahasa is, of course, still very weak.
Okay, we also continue to ask Azhar about the status of the Malay language.
I think it's more rhetoric than actuality. We know the international regional language is still English. At one time when Suharto and Mahathir met, you know, they didn't really want to speak the Bahasa, right? I mean, both prefer to use a mediator and they converse via English interpreter, you know. It's a surprise, but I think politicians can say that this region can be united under one language, I think it's more utopian dream than a real thing that they can work for.
So that was Dr. Azhar Ibrahim, Deputy Head of the Department of Malay Studies at the National University of Singapore, commenting on the question of the elevation of the Malay language.
And I totally agree with Dr. Azhar Ibrahim there that the Prime Minister's comments on elevating Malay to the lingua franca, at least for the ASEAN context, I think that's more of an utopian dream rather than something that is actionable, really. Because, I mean, think about it, even just within the Malaysian context, you got just a diverse array of how the Malay language is actually manifests itself. This last night, I was speaking to my 7-Eleven guy, and he's from Kedah. And I love talking to him because I'm just trying to understand like his slang and the different the different words that he uses to express himself. It's I find it fascinating.
There's regional variations,
yeah,
right?
I mean, Kelantan don't even speak so like, I can't understand.
So the question is, of course, we tried to standardize Malay spoken in Malaysia, and in fact, in the region. Right, so the idea of Baku, of course, being the standard Malay pronunciation. The question is whether people have actually fallen in line with the standard pronunciation. They might speak standard Malay at school, but they might not actually speak it at home or among their friends. And you see that in English as well. I mean, there is what they call received pronunciation for English. It doesn't mean that the standard is conformed to just because it has the heft or the weight of government behind it.
And this idea of having a certain standard, so to speak, for a certain language, I wonder, whether that really holds water to begin with, because if the idea for language is to just convey ideas and it's constantly evolving, then why should there be this, objective standard that we must all adhere to? As long as we understood, be it in short form or whatnot, then so be it, right? Yeah. I mean, some might say it might be bastardized of sorts, but hey.
Yeah, but then the other thing, of course, is the issue of wanting a language to be a regional language. And of course, historically, Malay, in all its varieties, was a lingua franca. It was seen as the language of trade, but from a different time. And you think of attempts that would have happened organically. And then, of course, we have these inorganic attempts by governments, interested groups like, say, the promotion of Esperanto as a language for Europeans, so that all Europeans would be able to kind of like speak the same language, quite unlike what they really do, which is speak very many languages. And that failed, right? Esperanto as a project failed.
Esperanto as opposed to Despacito? Yeah.
Two
different things.
Si, no. Senor.
Si. Again, in this day and age, when you have got the might of, the states and also China even, right? And when you consider how perhaps learning those languages might go along, a lot further, at least in the international context versus, say, Malay, right? And I think...
had that drill with Karim Razlan, and his point was that, in fact, if Malaysians remember that Malay as the base language for Bahasa Indonesia, is the language of 200 million people in the Indonesian archipelago. I mean, all the opportunities that will come with that. I mean, Mandarin, yes, maybe, but there are also huge communities. I mean, think Tamil speakers are like, more than 50 million, maybe 60 million people. It's a market, and a market that will support a language and all that comes with it.
Sure, yeah. And don't get me wrong, I still think that Malay is a very important language for Malaysians, especially if you're going to uphold this notion of a national identity. It's a travesty that you got many Malaysians, at least many that I've encountered, who actually wear it as a badge of honor when they say, oh, I don't speak Malay, as if it's some kind of elitist, badge that they can just flaunt about, right? But when it comes to Malaysians being able to converse in Malay, I think that's absolutely crucial, at least in the Malaysian context. But beyond that, though, I think there's so many competing interests there.
You take it up with Karim Razan, though. Now we have Arctic Monkeys, Fluorescent Adolescents, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Shahad Kutin, and with me, Tan Chung Han, and the morning run continues. It's coming up to 6 minutes past 7 is the 28th of July, and of course, it's a Friday, cause for endless celebration. But, well, you still have to get through today. Yeah. We all do.
I wouldn't quite say endless, like at least for 48 hours over the weekend.
Yeah, you know, that's right. So,
but still, plenty of fun. We'll take what we can get.
Absolutely. Yes. Now, 2 days ago, the Deputy Prime Minister, Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, said that more engagement is necessary to translate the drop in crime with improved public perception of their safety. Now, BFM in 2015 spoke to Dr. Amin Khan from Pemandu and Dato' Akril Sani Abdullah, Director of Bukit Aman Crime Prevention and Community Safety Department, to get them to help us understand how initiatives, strategies can be put in place to match or bring closer together the divergent perception and actual crime rates. So perception going in one direction, crime rates going in another. And this is what Dato' Akril had to say.
We know that people will always have these perceptions of crime is high. So what we are going to do is that we are deploying our personnel on the streets. And when they are on the street doing their patrols, they will do the engagement with the publics. We are instructing our patrolmen on the street, not only you just doing the crime prevention round, but you must stop and talk to the people, get to know them, visit the places of worship, try to be closer to the public as possible. We are also engaging the schools. We are also mobilizing our women police personnel through these Amanita programs. We are trying to create an atmosphere that the public is looking at the police as their friends,
right,
not as some kind of authority with gun blazing kind of things.
We also asked the two gentlemen how the police themselves feel about going around and engaging with the public and the community.
They are very positive about this engagement with the public,
right,
and they have come to realize that engaging with the public is part and parcel of their everyday tasking.
Right.
It is not that they have reluctance to meet up with the public. Of course, there will be one or two. But I would say, with a full confidence here, 99.9% of our personnel, they are very positive, they are very open, meeting the public as part of the, what we call it, our transformations to be a force that is, I would say, more proactive rather than reactive in nature.
I think if I can add on, for the urban areas, Tamantun, Dr. Ismail, and Brickfield, we have coffee with cops. And for the community...
Coffee with cops?
What,
yes.
It sounds like a TV show.
Paid by the cops.
Paid by the cops?
Yes.
Are the donuts?
Wow, that's...
Without donuts.
An interesting bit of irony there.
The urban areas. We are trying at Tamantun,
yeah,
Dr. Ismail, and Brickfield.
So what happens at coffee
there
with cops?
There is community engagement, basically, as Commissioner Police said.
So you have like an open house and everybody comes by and chats?
On Sunday morning, for example,
right?
You chat about it. You chat about your community.
Okay, that was Dr. Amin Khan from Pemandu and Dr. Akhil Sani Abdullah, Director of Bukit Aman's Crime Prevention Community Safety Department, speaking to Ezra Zaid and Caroline O back there in 2015. I don't know if those two individuals are still in those positions, but they were then. And they ended on a high note talking about coffee with cops, because which is unfortunate connotations. We always think of kopi money, and kopi money is not exactly a good thing. In fact, I think today, the cops are committed not to taking kopi money.
Yeah. Or perhaps they should change it to teh tarik with cops, maybe. Or is there a connotation with teh money? I don't know.
Well, I think, there's this issue, and I think it continues to exist. Divergent expectations about what safety might mean for you personally and what's being done by those in authority. I think one of the things that's missing often in the mix, Ahan, is our personal responsibility. So that's something we're always blaming the cops. I think they had to be, because they have their share of blame to take, especially in terms of corrupt police officers who, terrorize foreign workers and stuff like that and extort money from them and, spend most of their time looking for that extra cash rather than policing our streets. But that aside, there's also the question of personal responsibility. If you leave it always to somebody else, of course you're going to feel quite unsafe.
And also keeping in mind that when it comes to the police and what they're able to do, often it's reactive. active, right? So, I mean, yeah, you can say that there is the room for prevention, right? Crime prevention, but it only goes so far. And once it actually happens, then how much can the cops really do? So you're absolutely right that when it comes to...
Well, they can investigate. So, you know, for us who've had, say, a housebreaking, you will know how frustrating it is. I've had a housebreaking with CCTV images, which weren't even circulated in my neighborhood. So I had very clear images of the men who broke into my house. I had to deal with police officers who, first of all, cast racial aspersions. First, they said, oh, they must be foreigners. Then they said, they looked like local Chinese individuals. Then it was like the shortest guy they pointed to and said, oh, ini orang Sabah. And I was like, how did you decide that this guy was from Sabah?
Hello,
the
average Malaysian does it as well.
No,
seriously, like the average Malaysian side, you know, even when there's a car accident, what's the first question that comes? Well, they ask about the driver's race, right? And then after that is gender. It's always race first.
The point is this, right? Yeah. When you have a low opinion of those in authority, of course, your general perceptions are going to be negative about your safety. Mm. So I'm saying that improving the image of the police force as competent, as intelligent, never mind sensitive and caring and, you know, doing all the outreach and having coffee with you.
But even then, how far will it go? You know, because despite concerted efforts by the cops, despite concerted efforts by, say, like the MACC, if people still want to choose to hold on to their preconceived biases or their own narratives, and then they're never going to believe it.
I mean, you say concerted, but we don't know what is the evidence for that concerted
coffee
effort.
With cops.
So initiatives like that are great, right? Because it suggests, at least from the top level, from the policy level, there is acknowledgement of a problem, right? Whether those efforts are even, they're put into place. I mean, I don't think... I've had one engagement in my neighborhood with a police officer who brought to talk to the community. But what he did, interestingly enough, was he gave a speech and then didn't take any questions. And if you had a concern... And so I talked about illegal, gaming outlets in my neighborhood where the police officers actually sat outside the gaming units. They were never shut down. I talked about... an instance where I watched two young police officers try to extort money from a Pakistani national. I know he's a Pakistani national because after they left, 20 minutes after they tried to get money, unsuccessful, I sat with them because we were both at the bus station. And I said, who are you? Where are you from? And what were they trying to do? And I said, why don't you report this? He says, I'm not going to report this.
But for every instance that showcases or that upholds that side of the narrative, you can easily point another one as well. So recently, I attended I was covering a protest, okay? And the cops were there. You know what? The cops handled it very, very well. It was a very passionate and emotional affair. It involved the demolition of an Indian temple and the members of the community there were protesting against that developer who actually tore it down. But the cops let them let them say their piece. After 10 minutes, just told them to calmly disperse and everything went off without a hitch.
I have happy stories with cops as well.
You have happy stories as well?
Absolutely,
yeah.
I do.
But
I was saying in that instance of engagement, what happened was all I got after making that report was a form letter that said, thank you very much for participating in this dialogue.
Always.
No follow-up.
Always room for improvement.
No,
I think we can all agree there's always room for improvement. But my point here is this. You know, very often, and this is not just when it comes to, say, crime. Economics, same thing as well. When you even present people with that hardcore data, right? You got these hard numbers here. Yet, if they choose not to believe it, what can you do? Some people, even when presented with evidence, they still want to believe that the world is flat.
You know why it's called the trust deficit? We have, and that in this country is at epidemic proportions.
But
we're coming back after this with more BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.